I'm Kaylin. This is my basement, and this is my horse blanket.
Your one horse blanket?
Okay, fine, Christine. This is one of my horse blankets.
I actually didn't know you had more than one.
Hey, you know I was a little horse girl when I was younger.
Yeah.
It checks out that I would have multiple horse blankets. Yes, I for sure at least have two, because it's this one and then my original house blanket that my aunt made for me for a birthday when I was little.
Ah, gotcha.
And it's cute. It used to be, I'm going to say quilt, but it's not quilted. It's a piece of horse fabric with a fuzzy flannel on the bottom.
A piece of horse fabric? Oh, gotcha.
Like Joanne cotton, whatever.
Yeah.
All the fluff is completely gone. It is just fabric. And there's a giant hole in the bottom. And I did sew it up one time in a very cheater way because it's a sentimental blanket. I'm not going to replace the fabric.
Right.
And so it's great if you just want like a sheet covering you.
Yeah.
Welcome to Rough Around the Hedges podcast, everybody. Now that you know my horse girl history, I'm Kaylin.
And I'm Christine.
Today, we are going to be talking about shipping plants in the mail.
Yeah.
The weather's warming up, at least here in Minnesota, so we are going to be able to send plants. And not that you can't send plants in the winter, you can send them with heat packs and stuff, but like, personally, I try not to.
Yeah.
Yuck.
There's a little bit of a unspoken agreement, I would say. Within our community of, like, after, like, September, really.
You don't want to.
You don't ship, you don't buy plants that are going to get shipped to you until a good April, mid-April. Yeah.
You have the outliers.
Yeah.
Who do it anyway.
Yeah, I mean.
And who take that chance.
Yes.
And, like, more power to you. I just, you can't 100% trust people to replace the plants if they die in shipping.
Right.
And, like, you're already paying $10 for shipping. The plants are, you know, you try to buy a couple plants to make it worth it. Before you know it, it's at least a $60 order.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, I don't want to lose that money.
Mm-hmm.
So, what about you? Have you had any plants mailed to you?
Yes. And I've solely ever done it in the summertime.
Yeah. Was last year the first time you mailed plants?
I've done it like a handful of times.
Gotcha. Because I remember the first time you were like, Kaylin, help me. And I was like, right. It's really easy. All you do is this.
Yeah, the very first time and to be fair, that's the only time I've full on shipped a plant. So when I've shipped plants, I've tried to do cuttings because they have a much higher.
When you say cuttings, you're probably talking about Hoyas specifically.
Yes, these are Hoyas, yeah. So they have a much higher chance of.
Hoyas in a Ziploc bag with a moist paper towel are so indestructible.
They are the game changer.
Indestructible.
Months.
Damn.
Months of it.
I love it. Let's see. Me. I started getting plants in the mail before I started shipping them, but like you get enough plants in the mail, you pay attention. Like you learn what you should be doing. And so I feel like I have a pretty good handle on how to ship plants safely. And I've done it many times. So, if you've never shipped plants before, there's a couple cardinal sins you don't want to commit. One is putting your... Okay, this is going to directly contradict what Christine just said. Don't put your plant in plastic.
Oh.
Hoya cuttings, disregard. Hoya cuttings, do what you want. The reason you don't want to, like, bag up a plant in plastic is because if it gets too hot, that heat will stay trapped and it's not good for the plant. Like, it can totally, you know, get the plant to mush. Also, if it's too cold... And you have the plant in a bag. Actually, I don't know that there's any consequence for having it.
I could see something where if you water it before you ship it and you put it in plastic and then it gets cold, that moisture is going to thus potentially freeze on said plant. Yeah.
Which I mean, if the whole thing freezes, it doesn't matter if it's in plastic or not either. So
that's just where my brain went.
Yeah. Hoya cuttings themselves do well. In the plastic bags. I imagine it could just get too hot and cook them.
I think it all depends on where you're shipping from / to, right? Because
And being mindful of your temperatures.
Yeah. In the Midwest, Hoyas in plastic bags during, you know, summer, spring, late fall, all day long would be fine. But like if I was to ship to Arizona in the middle of summer, I probably wouldn't throw it in a bag.
And the reason with the plastic bag, we want to keep it sealed because we want to keep the moisture in that paper towel.
Mm-hmm.
Or like if you
don't want that to dry out.
No, you don't want to dry it because it dries out and the plant just is going to like...
Yep. Especially cuttings because they don't have anywhere to...
Yeah, they have no other source of getting moisture.
Yeah.
So really helps that they're epiphytes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so don't do that. What's another don't? I can only think of the do's.
And this is good on the buyer side too. Always look at 2-day as a minimum.
Yeah.
Don't, like, if you're going to just throw it in the USPS mailbox. I mean, again, depending on where you're going to. Minnesota, stuff will most of the time get there next day. Yep. If you're shipping out of state, look at 2-day minimum, if so not overnight.
It says 2-day. It's not necessarily 2-day, but it's worse if you pick a longer shipping option.
Yeah. If you're picking like regular, say we're not doing USPS and we're just doing FedEx or UPS ground, that's depending, again, we're depending on where you're going, like California, that's like 5 days.
And you can look up their little calendars online. They have like a color coded map of the US where it'll tell you like from here to here, it takes this many days. Mm-hmm.
And coming from someone who's like, my job is shipping shit all day long, the only, at least with FedEx, the only guaranteed delivery is overnight first class. That's the only guaranteed delivery that FedEx will make.
Damn.
Is next day by 8:30 a.m. if you pay like the, you know, we're talking like $160 to ship, something like that.
That's their only guarantee.
That's their only guarantee.
Dang. Mm-hmm. Okay, so plants, they can survive in the mail.
Yes.
For 2 weeks.
Yes.
If you package them right and everything's cool.
And I've seen stories of, you know, months too.
Doing Haworthias or like some kind of succulent, like, yeah, they can survive that long. And like, you know, again, know what you're buying. If you're getting like little seedlings that are fragile, those aren't going to last.
No.
Hoyas, Christine's saying they'll last. You know, succulents, I'm sure they can last. Tropical foliage with like leafy greens, I guess it just depends, but I wouldn't.
I was like, going to say, you're probably going to get a sad, for, like, you're going to get sad foliage for sure.
Oh, yeah, but the stem might make it.
Yeah, and then the stem and roots might be okay.
But okay, back to, sorry.
Yeah. And that's where I was going to say, like, you know, it's your money, you're deciding what you want to do, your buyer's going to decide what they want to do. But really, the only time to really, really consider overnight shipping is if you are, in my opinion, shipping in the dead of winter. That's really the only time to consider it. That way, otherwise, I think 2-day is a good, like, even ground, because 2-day shipping tends to not be horrible.
Yeah. Okay, so let's count when these 2 days start. Let's say we're mailing a plant 2-day.
It's Monday.
Yeah.
Make it easy.
There we go. I was like, the episode comes out on a Sunday. There's no mail on Sunday.
Yeah.
Let's say we're going to mail on a Monday. We get 2 days shipping. So you drop it off in the morning, 8 a.m. at the post office. You pay your stuff. You leave. Yes, that package is going out that day, but no, they don't count that as one of the days.
Depends on the carrier. FedEx does count that
as a day.
I'm
talking about USPS.
Yeah. FedEx does count that as a day. It would get there Wednesday.
By Wednesday?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Wednesday by 8 p.m.
So, like, honestly, I've only shipped stuff UPS.
Yeah.
USPS. Just go to the post office. It's easier.
Yeah, USPS Priority Mail, they are a little more all over the place on what their first day is considered.
From my experience, learned that the day you drop it off is not one of the days. Mm-hmm. So then the second day, which would be day one, Tuesday, mm-hmm. it's going out. If you're mailing it not that far away from you, it'll probably get there in the one day.
Yeah.
But the second day would be Wednesday. You can expect a delivery on Wednesday, but that doesn't always happen.
Oh, so that is 2-day.
What?
That would be 2 days.
Yeah, but like, I feel like stuff's shown up the day after for me sometimes.
Right.
So like, they're trying, but it's, you know, again, it's not, I'm not paying for the guarantee. And like 2 to 3 days for me is okay, because that plant is going to be just fine mm-hmm. on that extra day. But yeah, Mackie was telling me that USPS, they're moving mail all the time. Mm-hmm. So you can mail a plant out on Friday or Saturday, and you just want to avoid Sunday being the delivery day.
Yes.
So like, if you do 2-day delivery on, like, you mail it on a Friday, mm-hmm. Saturday's your first day, Sunday's your second day, but they're not going to deliver it on a Sunday.
Correct.
So you wouldn't want to mail on a Friday.
Unless, asterisk. I mean,
you, if it, like, it could get there on Monday and it could be just fine.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, you can mail stuff on a Saturday. It's going to get out. It's going to get in the system. It's going to move around on Sunday. The whole system doesn't shut down.
And I was going to say, I feel like carriers are changing too. Cause like
I have seen people delivering on Sunday.
I've seen postal workers like delivering stuff on Sundays. And then FedEx just announced that they are now going to offer Sunday deliveries.
Mm. I wonder if that's, I've always thought they're just like catching up.
Yes, they are, and this is a little tea. I've seen a lot of people complaining, like in the Facebook groups right now, this being end of March, that, you know, stuff is like super delayed and all of their packages are getting lost and stuff. Yes, because this is a horrible time of the year to be shipping things, because FedEx and UPS have laid off their seasonal workers from the holidays, and they're not used to slash they're catching up on that loss of staffing.
So stuff everyone's got to get their routines
down. Yep. It's a horrible time of the year to be shipping because stuff just slows down.
Gotcha. I wonder how long.
Fun fact.
I wonder how long it takes them to just like get their ducks in a row and get back.
Probably
up to
about
speed.
Like Christmas time.
Oh no! When they hire the extra people again.
I have noticed that they've started to get better, but yeah, the last month and a half has been horrible of like getting stuff. Like today, it just doesn't happen. Even overnights aren't just they aren't happening. Yeah. Like it's just stuff will go to like the main hub in Tennessee and just sit.
And then just sit. Yep.
And then customers are like, "Where's my stuff?" I'm like, "In Tennessee," and I can't do anything about it.
No, you can't. Yeah. So unless you're purchasing a guarantee, it's more a guideline than an actual rule. but yeah, I haven't had any problem with 2-day, even if it, you know, gets stuck in the mail a little bit. Like the way I package my plants when I ship, like everything should be good for a week.
Yeah.
Like even if it was like worst case scenario, almost worst case scenario, 2 weeks, like I feel like we could have some hope at the end of that 2 weeks.
Yeah.
That stuff is going to arrive alive.
And that's where going back to like time of year is really nice. Cause if you can look at your weather,
that's right. And pay attention when you're shipping.
And we're talking as both buyers and sellers, right? So like if you can look at your weather and go, okay, it's going to be above, I would say 45 is kind of my cutoff. If it's going to be above 45 at night for the next week and a half.
Yeah.
I'm comfortable buying plants in the mail and sending plants in the mail. Because yes, it's 45 outside.
Be 45 inside the truck.
It could get 45 inside the truck, and it could eventually get 45 inside your package. But that the amount, your plant, hopefully, unless it gets like shoved in the bottom of a truck somewhere and lost, is never going to spend more than at least one night on a truck.
Mm-hmm.
Unless, I guess I should take that back. If you're going far, it probably might spend 2 nights in a truck.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they're going to be in depots. They're going to be, you know, in a bin somewhere.
In a distribution center.
Yeah. So it's not going to get crazy cold / hot.
Yeah. For me, if someone asks me to ship a plant, like I'm checking the weather and I'm going to be like, yeah, I'll ship on Monday. Or like, you know, I can ship today.
Yeah.
Or like, hey, I see it's supposed to have a couple of these days. Like, I just want to hold on to this a couple extra days so that we don't accidentally get caught in this, you know, 30-degree bubble, whatever. And people, I haven't had anybody be like, no, ship it now.
Right.
I'm not selling and shipping for business plants anyways. So I don't have the kind of volume that like some of the like online plant. I'm thinking about like your Hoya group, how those people are always mailing. Like, I don't have that kind of experience. But
what I really like about the big Hoya group is the sellers. And I think it's a rule. They have to disclose the days they're going to be shipping. And a lot of times you'll see like if they're doing a sale on Thursday, they won't ship for until like the next week. They'll say they're shipping Tuesday, Wednesday or whatever.
Yeah.
And again, communication is huge. Always talk between, you know, buyer and seller. Communication is huge.
Yeah. And hopefully as a buyer, your seller is communicative. And as a seller, you better be so transparent that no one ever has to ask you a question about when are you doing this?
Right.
Because that's just kind of shady. Temperatures, what was that? I was going to say something about the weather. What was it? Oh, if it's going to be cold or, like, you know, getting to the 30s, you can. They have heat packs. They're like reptile heat packs, kind of like your hand warmers, but they last up to, I usually get the 72-hour ones. I feel like they have longer ones.
They have 96-hour, I think.
Yeah.
And I think they have as low as just 24-hour, I think.
Mm-hmm. And that is just, this little heat pack is going to emit warmth that's going to stay in your box and keep your plant at a higher temperature than the outside air.
Yep.
You don't want to...
Don't put it on the plant.
They say on the packaging, put the little warmer in a paper bag and tape the bag to the box. That way it's not rolling around inside the box and it's not coming in contact with your foliage.
Yep.
Or, you know, your live animals if you're doing reptiles or fish.
Yeah.
But yeah, and it's supposed to just like emanate enough heat for like that little area. The box will keep it in.
Yeah.
Remember, we're not insulating our boxes. Well, okay, I'm not shipping in the winter. I don't insulate the boxes when I ship. When I have used heat packs, I have not gotten any kind of insulated box. You can, but then I would actually be a little worried about how much heat is coming off that heat pack in that little space. Because like those guys do get warm to the touch.
Yeah.
And when I say warm, I mean like hot.
I'll have to look it up. In that Hoya group, there was a guy who did an experiment. He put Hoyas in a styrofoam box with heat packs and threw them in the freezer to see how long they would last. Mm-hmm. And he found that the heat packs in styrofoam specifically were killing the plants. They were overheating the plants mm-hmm. in the freezer faster than the cold would get to them.
Yeah.
So yeah, you just have to kind of be a little careful of that. So it's definitely, I would argue something that you don't need both unless you're in the middle of the vortex.
I mean, so I feel like if you're going to use a styrofoam container, you would want just a little bit of warmth.
I've gotten plants in styrofoam with insulation around it. So like the foil packaging.
So styrofoam and foil?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And that was the plant that was shipped to me when I didn't want it to be. So that I would actually argue wasn't the greatest because by the time the plant got to me, it was cold to the touch. It didn't get cold damage, but it was cold to the touch. So if I hadn't had it shipped to my house, I had it shipped directly to my place of work. So I got it right away. If it had gone to a mailbox and sat for the day, it would have been dead.
Yeah.
So
because like you can have the insulation to keep the heat in, but guess what? Time is not on your side.
Well, in styrofoam,
it is going to equilibrium.
Well, in styrofoam, breathes, right? It's not airtight.
Mm-hmm.
So that plant specifically wasn't put in anything inside of said styrofoam. Like it had polyfill to keep it from rolling around, but there was nothing to keep anything airtight.
Yeah.
Which I know that kind of contradicts what we said about not putting stuff in plastic, but there's definitely considerations you have to think of.
See, all of this just sounds like
don't ship
much.
In the winter. Don't
exactly,
ship in the winter.
Exactly.
Just don't ship in the winter. Save,
at your own risk.
Yeah. Prepare for those 4 months of, if plants are an income for you, just plan on those 4 months of no income. Stock up on your cuttings and baby plants and stuff and come mid to late March, early April, have at it.
I mean, if plants are my main source of income, I feel like I would just do some experiments with shipping and packaging materials and see
right,
what
would,
works
you'd get
and what
it
doesn't.
Down. Yeah.
Because, like, I would want to be a good shipper and yeah. do everything right and have a system so I could still have my income streams.
Well, and I know local nurseries are shipping year-round, so they have their
I wonder how a big truck manages that, unless they're, like, heated trucks, like how you have refrigerated trucks.
Mm.
Okay, let's get to the fun part. How do we pack our plants for shipping?
Just throw it in a box?
Shut up. Don't do that. man, basically, if you're going to take one thing away from this, the plant inside the box, you do not want it to move around.
Right.
At the very base level, you do not want anything moving around in the box. You want it to be like a present on Christmas where you go to shake it and you don't hear anything. You can't tell what's inside that box because what's going to happen, you know, plants are fragile. They're not going to, if they get tossed around in the mail, they're going to show up broken and damaged. Mm-hmm. Like you have to figure out a way to get that guy safely to where he's going. So cuttings are obviously going to be easier to pack because they you can lay them flat. Like you don't have to worry about stems and 3D objects.
Yeah, they could almost even go in like padded envelopes.
They're going to get squished, but
to a point, they're not going to get nearly as kicked around as a box would, you know?
We could try that. We could try shipping cuttings.
I have. I shipped
in a mailer.
I shipped Pam some Hoya cuttings in a FedEx padded pack. Which cool. is basically just like a bubbly envelope.
Yep, yep.
She said the stuff arrived great.
Love it.
That's cool. I have noticed, and again, a little inside teeth. So FedEx Ground and FedEx Express were two separate companies. They recently did do a merger, but I have, in my experience, noticed that the Express carriers are far more sympathetic towards stuff. They don't seem to be as, like I've watched our Ground guy literally kick shit onto the truck. Whereas our Express guy is like putting them in his hands and like carrying them to the truck. Like they tend to be a little more gentle with things.
Interesting.
So when I can, I always ship Express.
We like those guys.
Yeah.
Okay. So my favorite thing to do, because I have the space for it, I save all my packing materials when I get stuff in the mail.
Yeah.
So Christine, we're in my basement right now. You can see right there. That is a bag of plastic bags. Yeah. That's a bag of small cardboard with insulation, little foil things.
Yeah, we got paper
over there's
and
a
shit.
Couple big boxes with bubble wrap and the craft paper and some corrugated shit. So like, I could ship anything right now if I wanted to. And I save tissue paper from presents, and I do save bubble mailers because I'll reuse those because then I don't have to buy any. But guess what? I'm cheap. I'm not gonna go out and buy packing materials, so I save it and I stick it in my basement so I can reuse it, which is also good for the planet.
Yes.
But what I'm going to, let's say I have a spider plant. I want to mail this spider plant to somebody. Mm. Let's say it's in a nursery pot. You can mail plants in soil. It's not like the airlines where you have to have no soil.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to have them bare root. Although you absolutely can mail plants bare root. But let's say this is in a pot with soil. First, you tip that thing upside down, that soil's coming out. The yep. plant even might come out. So what we need to do is we need to make sure soil's not going anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You can purchase polyfill from, like, craft supply stores, like Michaels or whatever. Polyfill is just tiny plastic, tiny, tiny, like, little hairs. And then as a clump, it's, like, fluff stuffing. It's what they put in stuffed animals.
Yeah.
And probably some pillows. And all it is just plastic. So, like, again, super bad for the environment. If you can reuse that, please do.
Yeah.
Try not to throw it away. Save it for later. I have a bag upstairs for sewing.
Yeah.
Because I've acquired it from people who are like, I don't need this anymore. And, like, I think I bought a bag of it once.
Yeah, there was a...
It just lasts because I reuse it.
Yeah. Back when I was working at the school, prom people were like getting rid of a bunch of stuff and they had a giant bag of polyfill just sitting out in the dumpster. I snatched that.
Yep.
I used almost all of it and I used it to restuff pillows on my couch. But yeah, I was like, I'm stealing that for plant.
Hell yeah. And like, if you don't use a coupon when you're buying it, like it can be expensive.
Yeah,
and I'm like, how is this expensive? It's plastic.
It's like $20 for like a tiny box of it. If I remember right.
I know.
It's so expensive.
Yeah. So, use your coupons if you have to buy it. Otherwise, just reuse it and save it. Or, you know, if you have family members who are looking to get rid of it or someone on Marketplace, snatch that up. That is a valuable commodity. Okay, back to what we're talking about. With the polyfill, you can take polyfill. You can also crunch up paper or newspaper. I've done both. But you're going to want to put that over the top of the soil. And then you're going to want to tape it down.
Mm-hmm.
Get some masking tape. Usually I'll do like 3 pieces of tape in a triangle configuration with the plant in the middle of said triangle configuration. And I'll just tape polyfill down, attach the sides of the tape to the pot, do it 2 more times.
Mm-hmm.
And you can test that right immediately, like a blizzard, after they make you a blizzard. They'll turn it upside down, and then you'll see none of the soil falls out.
Or very little of the soil will fall out.
Yeah, depending on, you know, if it's not covered by polyfill or tape, yeah, you might lose a little bit, but... It's going to keep the plant in the pot. It's going to keep the soil in the pot. It's going to minimize your mess. It's great. You can also use the polyfill to fill around your foliage so that doesn't move. Yeah. So, like, okay, now we have our pot. We have our plant. We can take this and we can put it in. At this point, I'm using a box. So get the right size box where it's not too big, not too small. But put the plant in there. And then you can fill around where the plant is and where the foliage, either with polyfill or with
paper.
Yeah, paper. I like to use, I don't use bubble wrap necessarily because that's plastic and I want everything to be able to breathe in the box.
Mm-hmm.
But if I need to wrap up like a non-nursery pot,
mm-hmm.
I would plastic wrap the pot. But you don't want the pot to move around in the box. So you can stuff it full, you know, if you're mailing multiple things, Tetris them in a way that everyone's secure, wedge them in. Use paper to fill any gaps. You don't want anybody shifting around. Sometimes I have gone and just straight up, whatever I'm shipping, taped it to the box.
Sure.
So, like, take a couple pieces of clear packing tape, tape the pot to the bottom, like, the side of the box, because mm-hmm. I'm laying the plant down in the box. And then I'll stuff the out, like, the other negative space with paper or whatever I have.
Yeah.
Whatever I have that I want to, you know, mail away, right? And this would also be where you're using the polyfill to stick it in. But you know, I said spider plant for my example.
Yeah, that's a hard one.
I would not use polyfill to support this plant's foliage. I'm thinking of like a philodendron with like a stem
mm-hmm.
with a bunch of leaves fanning out in all directions. I would put polyfill underneath those, on top of those, in little pockets. And boom, when I'm done, nothing's shifting.
Right.
I just thought of something. Sometimes they will put plants in those little, like, paper sleeves.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of like, imagine you buy flowers and you know how they wrap them up like a cone. That's what I'm thinking of, where, like, the paper is in a cone shape.
Yep.
Drop the plant in, fold the top down. In this little cone shape that you make with said little paper, yep. You can also put the polyfill around the the leaves so that they're contained in this little like tube almost. Mm-hmm. And then you, if you have multiple tubes, you can lay those in the box.
I would word
for a spider plant though, all of that foliage, like you can bundle it up like a ponytail in like this little paper bag cone.
Yep.
And then like it, when it releases itself, all the foliage is just going to flop back down and no harm, no foul.
Yeah. I was going to word of caution on there though, would be don't wrap that cone too tight. Yeah, obviously you want to be careful not like snapping foliage. I've definitely done that when I've
too tight. Yeah.
Yeah. I've accidentally, and just like bagging stuff up to hand off to people, I've accidentally like pulled the bag too tight and like snapped foliage, and then I have to tell the person like I'm sorry.
I'm so sorry.
Usually they're like whatever, it's gonna grow another one, but yeah, I mean, just something to be careful of.
Yeah, don't stuff too tight. Don't be too aggressive.
Yeah.
Avoid that. You want to be very careful. The little paper bag cone trick thing that works well when you're mailing multiple plants that are kind of bushy. It'll help like contain them, keep them together. And then in that bag, you can support them with the polyfill.
Mm-hmm.
In my example, I was like, we're mailing one plant and it's going to take up the whole box.
Right.
If you don't have to do that either.
As far as like boxing and packaging materials go, that's where USPS is nice.
Yeah.
Because if you don't already have the stock of stuff at your house.
They have all the stuff there you can buy.
Well, it's free.
At USPS?
USPS's priority mailers, those boxes are all free.
Are they encouraging you to use them as packing materials? Or are we just doing it?
People do it. Yeah. I have definitely have gotten stuff that's like wrapped in three USPS mailers.
Same.
So that is a... Well, hack, like, if you will.
Yeah, right. The priority mail, like, you can't just get a priority mail envelope, put something in it, and then not pay priority mail prices.
Right. So
if you're using that as your outside packaging, you have to go that route.
Yep.
If you're using it on the inside of whatever you're sending, just don't get caught. Yeah, I once got some pottery that was wrapped in like eight of them, and there was nothing wrong with them. I saved them. They're over there.
But I mean, for the most part, stuff is kind of cheap. So like,
yeah,
you could even go to Cub and get like the weekly shoppers and use that as packaging, you know?
Yeah.
I've done that when I've needed paper mache material for the school. Just gotten like take an entire stack of them.
I see. Oh yes. I love paper mache. Yeah. Okay. Packing your plants, just make sure nothing's moving around. Pack it full. Don't pack it too aggressively, but like if nothing's shifting around, and like do the shake test.
Sure.
Once you get everything in there, fold the box up, shake it, check it out. If you can shake it aggressively and nothing's moving, you did a great job.
You ever ship stuff in LECA, or do you pull it out?
Have I shipped stuff in LECA? I don't remember, but I wouldn't shy away from it.
Yeah, I would say you can. Obviously, don't put water. Don't like...
Yeah, I feel like you would give it a good watering before you send it so that the LECA
That's has. Where I would almost pull it out, have it be noodles and wrap the noodles.
You asked me this question and I was like, I don't know that I have. Or I said, I definitely haven't mailed anything in LECA is what I'm saying.
Right.
Now that we're talking about this is...
But have you mailed LECA plants?
No.
Okay.
No.
I would...
This is a conundrum.
Yeah.
Because like, how are we keeping...
I would
like
almost,
a water supply.
I would almost bare root it. I would almost pull it out. Maybe even wrap the roots.
Now that we're thinking about this, let's say I have a 4-inch pot. The plant's in LECA. It's established. I almost might soak all the LECA balls and then plastic wrap it.
Yeah.
To keep the moisture in.
Sure.
You could potentially also get some moist sphagnum moss and put that inside. Mm-hmm. Kind of almost like you're air layering your LECA-based plant. To keep a source of moisture in there.
Yes, but then after getting that moss back off of all of that, that's the problem.
I have sheer fabrics upstairs, so sure. I can just lay down like some chiffon, put the stuff on top.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Kind of like a cheesecloth, a cheese spongy kind of thing.
Yeah. Something breathable but solid.
That might be a special. That might be an instance of LECA plants probably need to be as short of shipping time frame as possible.
Yeah. Yeah. We were talking about selling some of my Hoya mother plants, and I did have my Matilda in LECA, and I did put him in soil. I did up-pot him for, like, various reasons.
Mm-hmm.
There was no way I was getting that plant out of the pot.
Sure.
Because his roots had all grown outside the bottom of the nursery pot. Sure. And there was no way I was going to be able to like slip him out.
Yeah.
So I cut all of those roots at the bottom off. Mm. And then I had to cut the pot to get him out.
Yeah.
And then it turns out all of his roots were just kind of living in that bottom section anyway. Mm-hmm. And so if I'm going to sell him, like I just cut off all these roots. He needs a little bit of establishment. Rehab. Yeah. So hopefully like he doesn't throw a big fit, but like if I sell him to somebody else and mail him off, he is going to. So I put him in soil. I up-potted him. I looked at him yesterday. He looks amazing. Mm-hmm. So I'll just let him get a little established in that pot of soil and then sell him or mail him off.
I've been pretty amazed how well established Hoyas can like basically regrow their entire root system.
Yeah, without dying off.
Yeah, like my fungi when I had root mealies and I basically took 2/3 of its root away and then just re-put it back in its pot. And like 3 weeks later, it was in LECA. It was, and roots were back at the bottom again.
Sweet. Like, we've heard that Hoyas like a root prune.
They sure do. They just like being pruned. I don't know. They're very resilient little dudes.
They like attention.
Yeah. they like abuse. where'd my thought go? But yeah, and it's weird because there are people like, I keep referencing back to the Hoya group because that's where I've seen all of this shipping happening like every single day. Mm-hmm. There are people that specifically want stuff in pond/LECA.
When they mail?
Yeah. Hmm. Or like when they're buying. That's where, I guess, maybe instead of shipping a LECA plant, consider putting it in pond first, since that's more soil-like and easier to, like that'd be easier to soak.
The only thing is I don't want you to switch its substrate over before you ship it to
no,
me.
No, I just, as a like seller, like as you're prepping to have plants ready to sell to ship, like these are considerations to think of. Obviously, there's going to be instances where you just one-off sell/need to ship. And mm-hmm. again, if you're, you know, have something in LECA, just maybe that's when we really consider having something going, dare I say, overnight, you know, just to give the most chance of success. Because that stuff's going to dry out so fast, much faster than soil, I should say.
Yeah. I'm just glad I don't have to deal with that.
Yeah, right?
Okay, now let's say we're mailing something that's not in soil or LECA.
So just cuttings or bare root?
Yep. Sphagnum moss, long fibered sphagnum moss is your friend.
Yeah.
So remember, this is not the peat moss that is like the brown coffee ground looking mm-hmm. stuff. That is a different sphagnum peat moss. This is we're talking about like the New Zealand long fibered sphagnum moss. Like it looks like
rabbit's foot fern.
It kind of, yeah, brown fuzzies.
Yeah.
It usually will come dehydrated in like a block
or a bale.
You hydrate it. And then it soaks up the water and it's like kind of like a squishy, plushy brown matter, whatever. I don't know what to call it. It's sphagnum moss, everybody. It's moss.
Yeah.
It holds water. It is easy enough to hydrate. It will hold on to that water for a fair chunk of time.
Going into a box with no, oh my God, brain. Light?
Plastic? Oh, light?
Like nothing to dehydrate it. Yeah, it's going to stay wet for a while.
Yeah, because the plant's not able to photosynthesize when it's in the dark.
Right.
The thing that you want to make sure you pay attention to, you can't just put sphagnum moss on something and put it in a box. It will need to be enclosed with like some plastic.
Yeah.
So you could do a Ziploc bag. You could do cling wrap. Mm-hmm. And it depends on what exactly you're shipping as to like where you're going to put the moss. But mm-hmm. like let's say I have a fresh cutting of a Florida Beauty. It's just cut one single node. I have a chunk of stem and I have a long petiole with a leaf on it. I'm going to put that, I'm going to hydrate the sphagnum moss. I'm going to squeeze it out because it holds a lot of water. You don't want it to be dripping wet. Pick it up, squeeze it so that it's still moist, but now it's lightweight mm-hmm. and the water is not bogging it down. But you don't want to like squeeze all the water out of it. play around with it. It's really kind of like it's fun to do, but two, you really kind of have to get the feel of it. So try a couple different ones. You don't want to be sopping wet. You don't want to be soaking wet. You want to be nice and moist and airy and light. So once you have the airy and light sphagnum moss, put that bad boy around your node, around your cutting, and then plastic wrap it. Mm-hmm. You don't need any of that moss to be like on the petiole or on the rest of the plant. You just need mm-hmm. to keep that. It's going to keep the moisture in at the cutting where it's been
at the node.
Cut, where yeah. it's going to use a little bit of that moisture or at least keep it from not drying out. And then securely plastic wrap that up. You could also put it in a Ziploc bag and just have the petiole and the leaf sticking out.
Yep.
You could do that as well. I like the cling wrap because I can like pack it up nice and tight.
Yeah. I like that you said to make sure you squeeze out your sphagnum moss. I think it's also there's a delicate balance of less is more with sphagnum moss, because I've seen a lot of people clump it.
Hey, I don't mind receiving plants like that, because that's free sphagnum moss.
It's true, but you got to be careful of if you do it like real tight, like that's not allowing any airflow, you can cause rot to happen because stuff's just sitting there wet.
And like if you're the one packing it up, like you don't need to give somebody a whole bale of sphagnum moss.
No,
it'll help your bottom line to use only what you need.
I'd be a little worried about sphagnum moss getting cold.
Well, we're not I'm not shipping in the cold.
That's true. But I mean, even like in the summertime, like, you know, if you have a 60 degree night, that sphagnum moss is getting chilly.
Mm-mm. I mean, yes, but 60 is fine.
I know. Yeah.
60 is fine.
I've had it be like, and again, I'm horrible at temperature sensing, but I've had like sphagnum moss be like cold to the touch before. And I'm like, that's the plant's probably fine. But
mother, warm it up in the microwave for me. Man, talk about bougie plants.
Yeah, right.
Here's your warm sphagnum moss. Son.
Well, that's okay. So that's a definite topic we can touch on of like what plants do and do not do well shipping.
Are we done talking about sphagnum moss, though?
I think so. What else do we want to say about it?
I don't know. You can do this with cuttings. You can do this with tiny plants. You can do this. If, you know, okay. Oh, we do. If you're not going to put the pot, like if you're going to bare root a plant, the sphagnum moss is good for this. You don't even have to shake off all the soil.
I would say don't.
Don't shake off all the soil?
Yeah. I've done some reading on this.
It's almost like a kokodama. Put the sphagnum moss around the root ball and the soil, and then plastic wrap it up.
Well, especially if you're shipping a plant that's been in soil and established in soil, plants make microbiomes. And so if you're ripping it out of that biome and shaking it off completely to then throw it in a box and send it to a brand new place with brand new soil, brand new,
it's
going to shock it. So if you can leave, you don't have to leave all of it, but leave some soil on the roots to maintain a little bit of that biome, it's going to have a better chance of reestablishing itself once it goes into new soil.
If you are selling rooted cuttings that were rooted in water, you can do just the sphagnum moss. You know, pad in some sphagnum moss, make a little ball, whatever, roll it up in some plastic wrap, that will keep the roots hydrated and be ready and good to go.
Yeah.
So sphagnum moss is great. Great for shipping. I like it. I really like receiving it for free. I think that's my favorite part.
Just throw it in a...
I've only bought one thing of sphagnum moss, and it was at the beginning of my plant parent journey, and it was at the reptile store, so it was like the icky brown with like all the bits in it.
Yeah, I think I bought two.
When somebody shipped me some good, like the nice New Zealand sphagnum moss, like I was like, oh, this is so much better. Why am I using that other shit? And then I would keep the good sphagnum moss and then use my shitty sphagnum moss to mail things to other people.
Yeah, yeah.
And to this day, I'm still reusing sphagnum moss I've acquired from other things.
Nice.
Yeah. Before we move on, sphagnum moss, like if it's exposed to the area, will dry out.
Yes.
So like that is one thing you do need to plastic wrap up.
Yep.
If you have an anthurium growing in just sphagnum moss, like that pot will need to be plastic wrapped so it can like hold that moisture in.
Yep.
Lest it dry out. Plants that don't ship well. Is that what we want to talk about?
I mean, sure.
Begonias.
Yeah.
What other plants will melt?
I've heard Hoya elliptica is really hard to ship. That's why I haven't gotten one.
Is it? What's the leaf like?
It's not any different than your normal like Callista phylla looking leaf. Everyone I've heard has said they just don't like to ship.
You should see if you can just buy some nodes of that plant. Then nobody has to send you any leaves.
Yeah.
And put them in a bag. And then you don't have the leaves to worry about.
Sure. Or you just find it locally. I mean, I'm not saying it's 100% failure because obviously people are obtaining them somehow. But I've heard that they are a real hard one to ship.
Is that an expensive one right now?
I haven't looked recently. 3-4 years ago, they were like $50 a cutting.
Oh, so they should be coming down a little bit. If you buy begonias, especially like Steve's leaves on his website, will have tons of disclaimers. Certain begonias, like this plant doesn't ship well.
Mm-hmm.
Here are what you should do if you buy and receive this plant. So like basically step one is temper your expectations. Two, know that you're going to have to rehab this when it gets there. And, you know, three is like it will grow back. It's going to look like shit, but it will grow back.
Right.
And so they just have some begonias that are pickier and harder to ship. And I totally understand that because I grow begonias and sometimes they're little bitchy divas. Other times they grow like a weed. So, and then sometimes there's just a week difference in between those two.
Yeah. I think we can still talk plants that ship and don't ship well, but I have, that made me think of another real quick recap when we get done.
If you guys remember back in season one when we had Adam Not Dude on the podcast, he wanted a Begonia brevimosa. And so I know Begonia brevimosa are rumored to not ship well. And they'll just like melt and then you'll have to just regrow it when it comes. So I prepped a plant. I made sure it had established roots. I left it in the pot. I packaged it up really well to ship to Adam in Arizona. And I wanted to make sure the plant was good on my end before I sent it, right? For it had to have the best chance of survival. And then he opens it and he gets it. And he told me, he's like, it arrived perfectly. And I was like, oh, shit.
Good.
That's cool. Yeah. Like, I had, like, mentally prepped him for, like, hey, the plant will be fine. You might lose leaves. They might arrive a little mushy. Just,
here's how you
rehab. It's going to be fine. The roots are great. I trust this guy. And then it just, there were no problems whatsoever. And I was like, oh. So part of me thinks that's a little bit of a disclaimer on Steve's leaves part.
Yeah.
Trying to get the people who are going to be bad at growing begonias anyway to maybe not buy those ones.
Sure.
And, like, your true begoniacs who are going to grow whatever they get, like, they don't care.
Right.
They know they're going to be able to save it, whatever, so. Begonias are one. I haven't had any other, like, I don't know about any other plants that are shitty as shit.
My brain, thanks to your thin leaf stuff, well, you know.
Yeah.
Especially if there's going to be,
like, if you're going to mail a maiden hair fern.
Yeah. Real high temp fluxes. You think of your thin leaf stuff being more fragile.
Well, and it is more fragile. It's thin leaf.
Yeah. Not just to temperatures, but also just to damage and being knocked around. And
yeah. Or somebody's going to be, I would say if you're growing anything in like a high humidity environment, you just shove it in a box and mail it. That's not going to fare well because there was no acclimation.
Sure.
Like, because sometimes plants are so dependent on high humidity that you take them out and they'll crisp up.
Oh my God,
sorry. Right away.
That's where, like, if you're doing like seedlings slash, you know, starter plants that have been in high humid, do we want to consider, you know, covering them? Like, I've seen people like
in
create these, yeah, like little bubble mailers essentially to keep the plant in like a little dome inside the box.
I would say I would be fine doing that in like the shoulder season where temps are going to be like 50, 60.
Yeah.
Like we don't have to worry about it getting too hot.
Yeah.
If it were to get too hot, I would be really concerned that they're just going to cook.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was actually thinking about this the other day because I had somebody message me on one of my marketplace ads. I have some anthurium seedlings. And I have been growing them in full, like, 99% humidity because they're wee little babies.
Yeah.
And they need it. But I've been slowly trying to harden off the first round of anthurium seedlings that I did. But like this person was like, can you mail some to me? And I was like, I could, but like, I don't know that I want to. Because like, I also don't want to hold on to these for two more weeks while I try to acclimate them down to lower humidity so that they're okay to ship. Honestly, for me as a seller, like that's too much work. I like he said he wanted to buy multiples. So I was like, I would do it for you, but I don't want to. And then he was like, I didn't read the listing correctly. And I was like,
Wasn't the anthurium they wanted or what? Oh.
No. And then I was also curious, like, I don't know how much the crystallinum reds go for, but like this person was thinking about buying a bunch and reselling them somewhere. I was like, that's a little dirty of a move, but you know, if you're going to buy, you know, a couple from me, I guess I don't care.
Right.
But no, they were just regular crystallinums.
Yeah.
So it was my mother plant. But also people read, please.
Yeah.
Don't waste my time if you haven't read that listing. It's been really bad this last week. Where are you located? It fucking says on the listing. There's literally two lines of text in the listing, and one of them is where I'm located. You are horrible. Oh, and then for some reason, okay. The town I live in, it's the zip code, according to the post office, says I'm in St. Paul.
Oh.
I am in a very, very designated suburb.
Of St. Paul.
Yes, but it's a town. It is not any, like, if you're from here, nobody thinks Egan is part of St. Paul. It's just the post office weird like that. Like, I used to live in Mendota Heights, which is in between my town and St. Paul, technically, and which was also a St. Paul zip code. So the fact that it still extends down, as like, I'm in the southwest corner, or southeast corner of Egan, and it's like, this should not be St. Paul. I don't know why it's like that, but people will be like, you're not in St. Paul. I'll be like,
no, I know.
It says in the listing, Egan. Just because Facebook tells you St. Paul, like,
yeah.
I'm sorry, but I do change it in the listing because mm-hmm. Facebook will automatically populate it as St. Paul. I'll change it to Egan, and then I post it, and you know what? It still says St. Paul. It doesn't fucking matter. It will not change.
That's crazy.
I'm like, this is so dumb. Have you ever... Oh, I've gotten plants that have arrived dead.
I haven't.
Things to do if you get plants that arrive dead. So here, the shitty thing, the plants that I got that arrived really sad, I'm completely blaming it on... I can't even say seller because it was a trade. I'm completely blaming it on this guy named Joey. He was being cheap, and he wasn't doing a fair trade, and he knew it, and he didn't send me pictures. So I didn't have the opportunity to be like, whoa, whoa, whoa. He gave me like a fret. It was a fresh cutting of a philodendron, top cut, one leaf. This leaf hadn't hardened off yet. That is a bullshit move. Mm-hmm. Joey, you are a dishonest little man. If you ever hear this, jerk. But like that has no chance of surviving.
Sure.
Even if you were going to root it at your own house. Like that's a liability right there. And mm-hmm. he decided to send it to me in a fair trade, which it was not. Mm-hmm. Am I still salty about this? Yeah, for sure. But that you know, we could also go on my rant about single node cuttings when it comes to a top cut and when it comes to fresh leaves. That fresh leaf that just unfurled doesn't count. Mm-mm. It's not going to help the plant do anything. It's not hardened off yet. It's not.
And depending on the plant, it's for sure going to die.
Yeah, that leaf is not going to make it. And if that was its only leaf, like, what a dick move.
Yeah.
So there's that. I wouldn't say the package stayed in the mail for too long. It's just like the stuff he was sending me wasn't viable.
Right.
Like he was so cheap in his stupid trade that what he sent me, like it got to my house and immediately like it was the day it came. I was like, sure, this is fine. 3 days later, we were having problems. Like mm-hmm. things were not going well. And like I had I had experience like with cuttings and establishing plants, and like I was not worried about this until everything that happened with these cuttings I got just declined. Mm-hmm. Just a super dick move. I don't know if I have anything else to say on that, but if you're doing, depending on where you're buying it from, like you should have like pictures of the plant beforehand before it arrives to you. And especially if you're doing a trade, make sure you send full pictures of everything you're sending and getting mm-hmm. so that there's no confusion, so that that person can't come back to you and be like, you sent me this and we agreed on this. Like, get that sorted out before anything goes in the mail.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of an awkward like, conversation to have, but like, it's going to protect you. It's going to protect them.
Yeah.
So know what you're getting. And like, you can trust people to a point, but even trusted sellers like might try to pull the wool over your eyes. So like,
well, this is kind of bleeding into what I wanted to chat on anyway. Live plant guarantee.
Arrive alive.
Is that a necessity? No. That is something the seller is full on.
Taking responsibility.
They're being responsible and they're, dare I say, they're being kind. Like when you decide that you are going to have a plant mailed to you, you are taking a risk. Nothing is guaranteed. Nothing is guaranteed. And I see this argument happening a lot online of whether or not carriers consider plants
as live.
Like insurance. Mm-hmm. Across the board, everyone, I see people argue about it all the time. No, they do not. Plants are considered a compostable thing, a perishable item. They will not cover it. You may get lucky once and it will happen. But across the board, I would say it's just a general rule of thumb. They will not cover it. So do not ever expect if a plant, you know, gets lost in the mail for 3 months, shows up broken, tattered, you know, the box is wet and disgusting. They're going to say that's a risk you took. So as a seller, I personally don't think you need to have a live plant guarantee.
If you're selling and packaging correctly.
Yes. If you have a healthy plant to begin with, if you're packaging it correctly, if you're doing all the steps the buyer requested.
If you're not shipping it in the snowstorm.
If you're doing all the steps the buyer requested. And again, this is where it's a buyer responsibility to say, hey, it's going to be cold here. Ooh. I need the insulation. I need the heat pack. I need all the things.
Yes. We should mention that too.
Yeah.
Requesting that when you buy.
Yep. If you as a seller are doing all of that, I don't think you need to have a live plant guarantee. At least
it makes you feel better as a buyer.
Yeah. But to expect a seller to do all of that, one, if the plant arrives dead, now they're in it again to try and to have to provide another plant. But what if a situation where it arrived alive, but then the buyer is being dishonest?
I'll see people who have like, hey, you need to send a video of what the plant looks
oh,
like
an unboxing?
The minute you get it, and it needs to be received within like this much time of the delivery.
Mm-hmm.
So like they're hoping that you're checking your tracking and you're going to go out and get that plant where it was delivered the minute it says delivered, right? Mm-hmm. So like there are steps as a buyer. Like you can't, don't leave it in your mailbox overnight. Don't leave it on your front porch. Grab that bad boy right away. Like Christine said, she had it mailed to her work instead of her home because she was at work and can immediately unbox that thing when it arrives. Yeah, there are some steps on your part as the buyer
mm-hmm.
that you have to do to ensure this plant gets there.
Yep.
And lives. Ah, man, there's so much to talk about.
Yeah.
So many different steps for buying and selling shipping plants. For me, the plants I've shipped, like not all of them have been something somebody's bought from me.
Mm.
I've shipped a lot of stuff to friends.
Mm-hmm.
Haven't had any issues. If I was to mail something to somebody and they were sad plants, like I'd probably just make my friend a new one.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know that I would have anything ready right away.
Mm-hmm.
If it was a buyer, like I, as a seller, I would want to make sure that it is or is not their fault. If it is their fault, no, I'm not going to replace that.
Yeah.
If it was something where like, you know, freak accident happened.
Yeah.
I'd be like, ah, shit. Like, I feel bad. Like, I do have an extra. I'll send you one. But like, I don't want to pay shipping for that. Like, I'm giving right. you the free plant. Like, right. meet me halfway.
Right. Yeah. And that's, yeah, that's something as a seller, you have to come to terms on like what you have to be prepared for what you would do in the situation.
Yeah. Have your plan before it happens.
Like my brain automatically just goes to, I will refund you. Depending on what happened, say it was a freak shipping accident. Yeah, I'll refund you shipping. I'm not responsible for that. Once it leaves my hands, I'm not responsible. Yeah.
Like it left my hands in great condition
mm-hmm.
and it should.
I made sure to walk it to the UPS
yeah.
and hand it off to that person.
Yeah. So that's, I guess, both if you're selling and sending. Selling and sending. Know what you're going to do. Know what risk you're willing to take. You know, for me personally and like shipping plants, like honestly, there's nothing I want bad enough to have it mailed to me.
Right.
So like, I'm just not doing it. In the past when I was, you know, buying a couple things, like never had any bad experiences,
right.
but I also like wasn't taking chances by having anything ordered in the middle of winter or like in the hot days of summer.
Or not buying anything that's, you know, $300. So you're out that if something were to arrive dead.
I mean, that's a whole other thing because I just don't spend that kind of money right. on plants in the first place. So like, man, spending that much money on a plant to then have it sent in the mail. Like,
yeah,
I'm not a gambling man.
That's where local nurseries are nice because they're taking that risk and they're
like
only putting
local
out the
Facebook
stuff.
Group sellers.
Yeah. Well,
they've already got them.
Well.
Yeah, if you're buying locally and somebody is not disclosing that they just got this plant in the mail, maybe don't buy it. Maybe you don't want that plant. You want it to be acclimated and growing and happy before you buy it if you're spending that kind of money on it.
Right.
And if they're not going to be upfront and honest about that, like, that is a huge...
Red flag.
Completely, yeah, red flag. And, you know, our local Facebook group took a stance on that they're not required to tell you yep. about that. So buyer beware.
Buyer risk.
Yep. If you're going to be buying plants, know what you're getting into. Educate
yeah.
yourself. Be prepared for some loss and some heartbreak. But also know that, you know, people are buying, selling, mailing plants every day. And people are getting plants that are happy, healthy in the mail
yeah.
just fine.
Yep.
So
9 times out of 10, works great.
Yeah.
Just be ready for the one time it doesn't.
Yeah. It's nice with all the, like, the Facebook groups that you can, like, see other people's experiences and learn from them.
Mm-hmm.
And like see what can go wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And
but I mean, again, it really comes down to once that plant is in the carrier's hand,
it is out of my hand.
Oh man, I have seen stuff go to Mexico. Like, and again, I'm not talking plants that I've shipped, I'm talking just from my work. I have seen stuff just get lost and just they take a trip
to Pennsylvania.
They go, stuff going to Minnesota from Indiana ended up in Colorado for 3 weeks. Like, it just stuff, it's weird. Like, it.
I ordered one of those sexy merman magnets or Christmas ornaments off eBay and it didn't show up when it was supposed to. And I was like looking at the tracking history and it took a trip.
Yeah.
It took a trip. I think it went to like Indiana twice. I was like, what are we doing here? Why did it go that way?
Yeah.
So it got to me eventually, but like, good thing it wasn't a plant.
Right.
It's just a sexy merman magnet. Ornament.
Yeah. I have considerations and kindness between buyer and seller because a lot of times it's really not either party's fault.
Yeah. As long as your seller's not giving you a bunch of red flags and
sure.
ignoring all your calls and stuff, that's shady.
Yeah.
And a lot of plant people are good people.
Mm-hmm. So just keep your head about you. Be nice.
Yeah.
Give everybody a little grace.
Lord knows we need more kindness in the world right now.
Yeah. But also don't let people get away with shit. If you know they're not doing the right thing.
True. All right. Plant of the week?
I have my plant of the week. Ha 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 ha.
What do you got?
I'm going to do my Philodendron Maximum.
Ah.
Which you saw on my counter this morning.
It's looking fantastic.
So the maximum that I have is actually from Christine.
Yeah.
Christine just gave me her plant because she was like, I don't want to grow this anymore.
Well,
and I was like, I don't need another giant fucking plant, but here we go.
That's because I got it in one of those crazy sales.
It was one of the,
it was lost the in the
garage
forest.
Sale plant. Lost in the forest.
I think I paid like $1 for it or something.
Yeah.
And then I bought it because I was like, oh, that sounds fun. And then I started really looking into it and I was like, I really can't take on another giant plant.
You didn't even give it to me very big.
No.
Like it was probably like in a 4-inch pot.
Yeah. I had grown it up a little bit. And I was just like, I can't.
So then Kaylin took it because Kaylin has a thing for big leaf plants. And I was like, what'll happen is I'll grow the maximum and the gigantium in the same pot. And I'll have a big plant, but it'll be two plants. Mm-hmm. And then I don't have to worry about like making space for it. Mm-hmm. Where we're at right now, he's in like He's in like an 8-inch pot, mm-hmm. a tall 8-inch pot. And he's got these big leaves and he's just like, they keep getting bigger and they keep getting longer. So, like, I would say his current leaf is probably, like, 25 inches long.
Nice.
Would be my guess.
Yeah.
And they're not, like, the terribly widest plants, but, like, he's starting to get that little wavy edge on the side.
Yeah.
And it's just very cool. This philodendron grows in a silly way. Silly to me because I'm not used to it. like an anthurium where he puts out the leaf and then the leaf gets bigger as it grows.
Oh.
And it's not the level of extreme that anthuriums do, but like he'll unroll a leaf and I'll be like, aw, it's smaller than the last one. And then give it 2 weeks and he like fills out and then all of a sudden this leaf is huge and I'm like, oh, it's definitely bigger than the last one. So it's fun to watch grow. His new leaves are like, they're kind of thickish, a little waxy. They have nice like pronounced white veins, good shape, good like sheen. I did give him he got a soap bath because I had found scale on him in my little scale infestation
mm-hmm.
The other day. So his leaves are shiny and happy and he's living in my brand new east facing window. I'm just doing good and being happy. I like it. I'm having nice. A good time with this guy. So plan of the week.
Very good. Mine's going to be my Hoya Sarawak.
Nice.
That one.
Is that the plate size leaved one?
It's one of them.
Yeah, yeah.
Sarawak is the darker, more veiny version. It's a really nice little guy. I had restarted him. He was one of the many Hoya that I restarted over the winter. He recently got up potted into soil and has put out four. I think he's working on his next set of leaves, so six leaves, but they immediately started getting big size, so they're probably like center of my palm size to start.
Damn, that's a big Hoya leaf.
But they'll keep getting bigger.
Cool.
He's just a happy little dude. Really nice dark color right now.
Can't wait to see a picture.
Yeah, I know. I need to take
as pictures. I say that, I probably have like six plants I need to post behind. In the...
Yeah.
Shit.
Thank you, everybody that's been posting their plant of the weeks. We really appreciate that. We have been very bad about it. Maybe when I go home today, I'll take some pictures and post them.
I've just been MIA on all social media that's not Facebook Marketplace. So,
yeah.
Sorry, folks.
Yeah.
Cool. I do have pictures of all of these. I can post them. I just need to fucking do it.
Just do it.
Yeah. I should do it during the podcast roll while we're recording. I'll be like, here you go.
A fantastic new TikTok account. Of this lady being like, here's this thing I've been procrastinating. This is how long I've been procrastinating this. I am going to time myself how long it actually takes me to
10 minutes
to just do it. Yeah. And that has helped me like be like, okay, yeah, I'm just going to go wash the floors or I'm just going to go repot this plant or whatever. Like I've been avoiding this for literally months and it's going to take me 15 minutes.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah.
Think about how long it's going to take you just to get it over with. It's wasting more energy in your brain by being there.
Thinking about it than just doing it. So that has definitely motivated me.
Dang. Wow.
Little life insight.
I feel attacked in a slight way as well right now.
Damn.
I have to finish my taxes. I did.
Oh.
95% of them.
Oh,
and
I
then
just
I walked away
did. I just
because I had to figure out if the windows we got qualified for the energy tax credit.
Oh, see, I'm lucky in that I don't have any of that crap.
It's like
I quite
a
30% literally
rebate.
Just do my W-2 and my rent certificate and student loans, and that's it. I'm done.
Damn it. Now here's our first tangent of the episode, which is
at an hour and 6 minutes in.
I used to work for a camera store, and we would get paid directly by the manufacturers for selling like Canon, Nikon, Sony, whatever. Oh. And so I got i9s from all of those different companies. So it was my W2, and then like 9 i9s I had to put in.
Gross.
Yeah.
Would it be different states too, depending on?
No. Oh, okay. It was Minnesota. Brandon has to do 2 states because he works in Wisconsin.
When Adrian was on tour, he would get W-2s from like 12 different states. Yeah.
Hate that.
Yep.
And then you have to do the state return in each of those states,
yep,
too.
Yep.
That's gross.
And fun fact, like TurboTax and H&R Block, once you get past like 4 states, they're like, mm-mm, we're not doing this. You have to go to an actual like accountant person.
Dang.
And so then his taxes would always be like so expensive.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah.
Well, on that unhappy note, thanks for tuning in to Rough Around the Hedges.
Bye-bye.
Bye.